Hi, I'm Alex Mason, host of Stock Stories. This is the podcast where we decode investing principles by analyzing the business behind the stock, as well as learning about mental models in order to help you become a better investor. You ready? Let's go. All right. Welcome to the show. This is Stock Stories. And yes, my name is Alex Mason. I am your stock storyteller. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm just delighted that you're here. I'm so excited to share some more insight and knowledge with you. I hope that you benefit from it. And yeah, just thanks for joining the show. Now, if you're new to the show, usually what we do on this podcast is we talk about specific companies, specific stocks. We look at the details, the financials, the business overview, the history. We get into all of that. Or we talk about mental models, kind of what are the philosophical ideas that kind of underlie investing and really just thought processes in general. That's normally what we do here on the show. Now, today, though, I thought I'd take it a little bit of time out for a topical show that I think has a lot of relevance, especially with a lot of new investors getting into the stock market this year with the quick crash and recovery that happened back in March and April of 2020, and even some volatility that we're seeing right now at the end of this year. I mean, we've seen some ups and downs, certainly here in the October-November timeframe, so just wanted to share some thoughts about what I wish I had known when I started investing. And I could have paid more attention to these lessons and saved a lot of money. Because I made some of these mistakes, I am still paying for it in my portfolio, for real. And I don't want you to have to go through what I went through. So I decided to compile a bunch of different ideas and thoughts and share them with you. Now, each investing mistake that I discuss here also ties to a mental model. So you can see the connection between some of the concepts we discuss in other episodes and their practical implications. Now, before we get into it, I won't go any further without giving very special shout outs to some of my fellow investors out there who contributed their thoughts to this episode. Now, it's always a good idea to get out of your own head sometimes and just see what others have to think, see what others have to say about a certain subject. And so I wanted to involve some of my friends in this. So I decided to use this episode as an opportunity to do just that and get some ideas from some of my friends. So you can find each of these people on Instagram. So go check them out. I'll link to each of them in the show notes for this episode. So thanks to Javier, and you can find him at Millennial Mogul Investing on Instagram. Javier has some great stock-related posts and just some good knowledge that he shares with his community there. Also, shout out to Mabel Nunez. You can find her at Girls on the Money on Instagram. And Mabel is an experienced investor, and we're definitely aligned with the long-term investing philosophy and outlook. And she's just great to talk with and has a lot of experience. And check out episode 96 of this podcast, where you'll find me interviewing her. Also, shout out to Terry Igioma. That's at I'm an Investor on Instagram. Now, Terry is another experienced investor who teaches other people how to actually trade stocks. And I interviewed her here on this podcast as well in episode 91. Also, last but not least, check out the guys over at Value Investor TV, Hari and Biko. They have a great podcast called Value Investor TV. And we definitely share a similar passion in breaking down individual companies. And I just love what they're doing. So go ahead and check them out too. They have a great podcast. All right. So thanks everyone for your thoughts and your feedback. And I've compiled your thoughts and feedback with some of my thoughts. And let's just get into it. What are the 8 mistakes of beginner investors? All right, let's talk about the 8 mistakes of beginner investors. So number one, I think is a great one to start off with, is lack of financial literacy. And really, it's the lack of mental models as a general concept. Now, I could probably do an entire episode on just this topic alone, but let's break this down to the key points. Now, before you can be successful in any new skill set, you must speak the language. Now, many people know they want to invest and that they need to invest, but they do not understand the language of investments or of business. This is something that comes with time, and it's something that I'm still learning, admittedly. And in my opinion, it should be studied before anything else. Learn the basics first. So for example, let's look at a goal-oriented example. Let's say you want to build $1 million portfolio over the next 10 years. And let's say you have $0 in your account right now, and you're willing to contribute $500 per month. So if you're trying to get to $1 million from zero, and you want to do it in a decade, contributing $500 per month, well, you've constrained this equation enough to result in a certain annual return that you would require. So that's going to require an average annual rate of return of 44%. Now, except in very, very rare circumstances, buying and holding common stock in a publicly traded company, that's not going to get you that. You have to know things like that. You have to understand the language and get a sense for how things relate to each other. Now, to take that example a step further, let's say that you're willing to invest aggressively and contribute $5,000 per month instead. Now, in order to hit the $1 million mark in a decade, you only need a 10% annual rate of return, which is much more achievable and pretty much in line with what you can expect from typical stock market investments over the long term. That's not even doing excellent. That's pretty much doing average. You can get around that rate of return historically. And what I'm getting to with these two examples is the principle of the rule of 72. If you don't understand the concept of the rule of 72 or how compound interest works, how can you understand what kind of investment vehicle you'll need to reach your goals, right? Now, I'm not going to get into the rule of 72 and compounding and all these nitty-gritty details here. I'm just trying to give an example of just some basic things that you need to know if you're going to be investing. You have to know some basic terminology first. Now, back in 2019, I took Terry Idioma's class on trading. And one of the first things that she has her students go through is an exercise where we just make sure we understand and have mastered basic financial vocabulary. For example, what is Wall Street? What is its significance? How does a share of stock work and what does it represent? How about ROI? What does it stand for and how can you calculate it? Without testable fluency in the fundamentals, we can't really ever hope to master advanced concepts as investors. Now, even though I've been investing for a few years, I constantly revisit the fundamentals because I know that I'm more likely to stick to the core principles when I study more advanced concepts because I already have a good framework to fall back on. Without a game plan, beginning investors are often led into speculations that they have no business dipping their toes in. So think about things like penny stocks, Bitcoin, Forex, or whatever the hot trend, quote unquote hot trend may be at the moment. Now, strategies such as day trading or options or using leverage, now that can make money and potentially a lot of money, but this does not negate the fact that the riskier the strategy, the more knowledge and skill is required. Let me repeat that. The riskier the strategy, the more knowledge and skill is required. Not knowing what you're doing and going into something speculative can be a way of losing money very fast, especially if you're a beginner. Now, my family has lost money investing and made money investing, so I've seen firsthand how lots of money can be lost in the blink of an eye without the proper knowledge and the proper controls in place. If you're a beginner, just do yourself a favor and leave the realm of intermediate to advanced investing topics for when you're ready for it. Blindly picking the stock of a large publicly traded company is a very different exercise from blindly picking a new cryptocurrency to speculate in. They're two completely different asset classes and they have different risk profiles. And if you don't understand that, you're going to get hammered at some point. The side effect of not being financially literate is that it's a lot easier to get seduced by get-rich-quick schemes. Always remember that taking extra risk is just not necessary for building wealth. If you have a basic foundation to rely upon, if you know some basic terminology and understand some fundamental principles of how investing works, then you can easily spot these get-rich-quick schemes, easily spot these glamour investments that seem shiny to everyone else. But to you, you understand how the markets work. You understand fundamentally how the economy works. So you're not really seduced by these things because you just have just a little bit more knowledge than the other guy. That brings us to number two, buying a stock because you like the product or service. Now, famous investor Peter Lynch, he's often been quoted as giving the advice, buy what you know. And I do think that is great advice to start from. But to know the product of a company and to have a thorough understanding of the business model, operations, management, the culture, the capital allocation policies, those are entirely different things. And we shouldn't conflate those two things. Complicating the investment process is not a good thing, but let's be real, oversimplifying it isn't a good thing either. Focus on your circle of competence. What are the things that you truly do know? And if you don't truly know it, then you should be aware of the fact that you don't know it. For a deeper dive on that concept, on that mental model, go all the way back to episode 15 of this podcast where I discuss that further. Now, of course, knowing everything about a particular business, now that's impossible. However, it is possible to know enough key information to make an educated decision about an investment opportunity. But that requires knowing what to look for and then going and looking for it. There's another mental model at play here that I want to point out. It's called the endowment effect. When you own something or you use something yourself, you automatically believe that it has more value because of your personal experience with it. I mean, think about how many people are selling their house and they think their house is worth a certain amount of money and they're so proud of it and they put all this work into it. But when it comes time to sell, the market gives them feedback that, hey, your house is really worth X when you thought it was Y. Well, that's the endowment effect at play. The difference between Y and X is that endowment effect premium that the owners place on their house just because they lived in it, it became a source of great memories for them, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't necessarily mean it's worth what they believe it's worth. So keep that in mind as well. So another way of thinking about this can be informative because depending on the circumstance, it can also be a quick way of clouding your judgment if you just believe something is worth more than it actually is. Now, I was talking with an investor the other day, and this person is a beginner investor and they're a friend of mine. And they were talking about how they got started investing and they were buying shares of a few companies and they were so excited. Now, these are companies that you and I would know by name. And based on an initial glance at their history and financials, I believe that no beginner investor has any business putting their money into these companies. Now, the thing is, I felt pretty conflicted because I was really happy for my friend and the fact that they got started in investing. I mean, that's so admirable, especially if you have never invested before. I highly encourage you, get started, open that brokerage account, fund it, start buying some stocks. But at the same time, on the flip side, I was thinking, man, I had to work really hard to hold my tongue in that situation because I wasn't being asked for advice. I was just being informed of a decision that my friend was making. But I am almost certain that this person knew hardly anything about the businesses they were investing in. Now, these are well-known companies to this person because they happen to use their products and services. But I got the feeling that they were treating their investments like lottery tickets that primarily served as a form of entertainment. Now, if you want to speculate, go ahead and speculate. That's cool. Just don't lie to yourself and pretend that you're investing. So know what you're investing in and make sure that you're not simply buying a stock because you like the product or service or because you own a product that the company made or something of that nature. That's not a good enough reason to make an investment and part with your capital. Number three, placing emphasis on price, not value. Now, you may say, but Alex, aren't we supposed to buy low and sell high? That's conventional wisdom, right? Well, yes, but a stock price alone is not enough of an indicator to base a decision off of. A stock that trades for $1,000 per share isn't necessarily more expensive or cheap than a stock that trades at $10 per share. Now, typically, I want to say a higher share price is a good thing. It says nothing about valuation, though. It's just how much each ownership unit of the corporation happens to be trading for at a particular time. Now, that's how people get caught up with penny stocks. They often believe that because the price of one share is, say, $1 per share or $3 per share, that it's inherently cheap. They can then just buy a lot of shares, and then they just need the price to go from $3 to $9 to triple their money. Now, this is a logical fallacy because the price of a single share doesn't indicate value. In fact, in the case of penny stocks, it probably indicates a low level of value because those are companies on the verge of trading at prices so low that they might become delisted, which means you could lose your money. And delisted, by the way, means the stock no longer trades on the stock exchange because it's basically worthless. So you lose all your money that way. Now, companies split their stock all the time. Now, look at examples like Apple and Starbucks. Apple split their stock 5 times so far in their history. Starbucks has done this 6 times. Now, when a company splits its stock, the share price gets divided by whatever the announced ratio is. So, for example, Starbucks may say, we're going to split our stock 2-1. Now, that means the number of shares on the market doubles, but the price per share gets cut in half. So the number of shares on the market increases proportionally, but the price per share decreases proportionally. So another example, let's say that a company has 1 million shares outstanding and trades for $100 per share. Let's say that you own 1 share. Now the company announces a 2-for-1 stock split. So this creates an additional 1 million shares on the market for a total of 2 million shares. Now at the same time, each share becomes worth $50 each. Now, instead of owning 1 share that costs $100, you now own 2 shares that are worth $50 each. Economically, you're in the same position that you were in before. So just because the stock is priced at a certain number doesn't mean it has a certain value. So be very careful of that. The mental model that I thought of here is the mere exposure effect. So seeing $1,000 flash across your phone screen, that may be a little bit more exciting than seeing $10 because of what your mind associates with those images. You might automatically believe that the number 1,000 is a lot, whether or not it actually is because of your personal past experiences with money. Think about the psychology of this. If all your life you've only ever seen money on the order of hundreds of dollars in your checking account, and you woke up one day and saw $100,000 sitting there, now that would be a lot of money to you. Now, imagine if Bill Gates woke up and that amount was in his accounts. He'd probably be really worried because his reference point is on the order of billions of dollars. So $100,000 is but a sliver of his entire wealth. Just because Alphabet stock trades for over $1,000 per share doesn't necessarily make it cheap or expensive. Just because Walgreens stock trades at $40 per share doesn't make it necessarily cheap or expensive. So be careful with associating a stock's price with the intrinsic value of the underlying assets. The price is just a symbol of value and not the value itself. Number 4, placing emphasis on recent stock performance. So this is a little bit different than number 3 because now we're talking about the movement of stock prices. When you look at a stock chart and you see the stock has suddenly shot up in price, you might think, wow, that stock's really expensive now. Alternatively, if you see a stock that has suddenly dropped in price, you might think, whoa, that stock's gotten really cheap. You see, the truth is, neither is necessarily correct or incorrect. We have to look at context and not just use recency bias as the basis of forming an accurate opinion. Now, usually, sudden jumps or drops in market prices are caused by some kind of an event. Maybe the interest rates change, maybe the company's earnings are higher or lower than what was expected by Wall Street analysts. There's a natural disaster, you name it. All sorts of things happen. Now, changes in market price are simply indications that other investors now have a different perception of the business's future prospects. Now, they might be short-term prospects, and they often are short-term prospects, but nonetheless, they are changes in perception. Beginner investors often get in at the highs because they're afraid to miss out on recent upward trends in a particular stock. They have FOMO, or the fear of missing out. They think, man, everyone is making money with this. I need to get in right now before it's too late. It's the mental model of scarcity playing out in the decision to buy a stock. Now, it's very dangerous. It is not uncommon for stocks to go from, say, highly overvalued to just somewhat overvalued. But that doesn't mean it's a buy. It's still overvalued. Likewise, a stock can go from severely undervalued to just somewhat undervalued or fairly valued, and it may still be worth buying shares. Now, if you're trading stocks, that's an entirely different operation. Forget the fundamentals of the business. All you care about is price movement. That's actually how traders make money, and that is the realm of technical analysis. Again, I refer you to episode 91 where I interviewed Terry. But that's not what value investing is, and that's not what we're talking about here. The mental models here are recency bias and scarcity. When something just happened in the recent past, we're likely to compare it to the present facts with the recent past as opposed to other sets of data. So this contrast based on recent memory might make us think that a stock is a better or worse deal than it actually is. Also, when people are drawn to a particular resource, socially, we feel like we should want it too. I mean, think about rolls of toilet paper at the beginning of the pandemic. It was totally irrational to hoard rolls of toilet paper, but we all did it anyway, right? We didn't want to be the one left out when the world is ending and not have toilet paper. For some reason, there's this mental model of scarcity and social proof that we don't want to be left out of this decision. The same thing is true with stocks. Oh, everyone is buying Amazon or buying Tesla. Let's load up on it too. Now, might it be a good decision? Maybe. Maybe it's not a good decision, but we can't make decisions based purely on what other people are doing. It's so easy to say, I know, but it's so hard to do in practice. And I know that many investors, myself included, struggle with this. I mean, especially being a value-based investor, I see all these growth stocks increasing in price over the years. And I mean, value investing as just a style has actually suffered a lot in recent years because growth stocks, particularly in the tech sector, have just been killing it, have just been rising and rising and rising. And so it looks like the people who buy based on intrinsic value are missing out, are losing money. And in the short term, you know, many are losing money, but that doesn't necessarily mean that sound principles aren't being followed either. So it's very easy to kind of go with the herd and just jump on the train because that's what everyone else is doing and because we're afraid to miss out. And there's that mental model of scarcity at play. So be careful of placing emphasis on recent stock performance if you have a value-based philosophy. Number five, failing to recognize business cycles. Now, this is really important. Way back in episode 4 of this podcast, I discussed the 6 categories of stocks. Go ahead and check out the episode for more details. But one of those categories that I talked about is cyclical companies. Cyclical companies tend to rise and fall with market cycles. Another category are called stalwarts. Stalwarts are these large blue chip companies that are considered the leaders in corporate America. They tend to grow their earnings between 8 and 12% usually, and they usually pay a dividend and they have a good likelihood of being around for a long time. Now, the problem is that many new investors often mistake these companies for stalwarts. They mistake the cyclical companies for stalwarts. Think about companies like Boeing or like Ford or Southwest Airlines and General Electric. These are all name brand companies that most people would recognize are big and have been around for a long time, right? Or think of a company like Chevron. They're probably reliable investments, right? Well, the answer is maybe. The trick is understanding the market cycle. It's not enough to identify which companies are cyclical and which aren't. If you're thinking about investing in a cyclical firm, you not only have to get the company right, you also need to know at which point in the cycle you're investing in. Otherwise, you could lose a lot of money very quickly and you might not see a recovery for several years. So, example right now is in the energy sector. The entire energy sector is just getting beaten down right now because oil prices are so low. So you see shares of all the major oil companies just tanking. And we see this pattern repeatedly with certain industries. Industries like banks are well known for crashes over the years. Industries like automobile companies, like look at Ford or General Motors. There's these constant ups and downs, and it's truly a roller coaster ride. So you can make a lot of money with those stocks, but you have to be a lot more careful because timing matters a lot more. Contrast that with, I'll pick on a stalwart example I've talked about in the past on the show, is Hershey. So Hershey is an example of a consumer brand that is truly a stalwart company. They're an old company, they're a big company, they've been around a long time, and they're still growing earnings at a decent rate. They're not super slow growing. They pay a dividend, and year after year, they just make more money. That's just what they do. They sell more Reese's peanut butter cups. They sell more Hershey's bars. They sell other things like snacks now, and that's just kind of what they do. They're a consumer-facing company that's pretty resistant to these huge market cycles. So don't confuse a Hershey with a General Motors is my point. So be very careful with that. The mental model here is the Dunning-Kruger effect. Now, when you know a little bit about investing, for example, that many successful companies or investments have powerful brand names and long histories, it's a lot easier to assume that you know more than you do. Realizing that a strong brand name exists does not equate with steady profit growth. And that's a way of escaping that way of thinking. So steady profit growth and a strong brand name are not necessarily the same thing. So remember, the Dunning-Kruger effect is when you think you know more than you do. Again, it's somewhat related to that circle of competence mental model we talked about earlier. Number six, lack of patience with capital allocation. Now, when you're allocating your capital for investment purposes, it pays to be patient. And the inverse is also true. It costs to be impatient. If you see a company that you like and you get excited about it, you may end up making a bad decision based on your emotions. Lacking emotional control is a surefire way to fail in investing and lose a lot of money. Now, one of the risks here is the inability to build a position with your portfolio. So let's say you find a company that you really like, it has good prospects, and it's trading at a reasonable valuation. So you get excited and you spend all of your free cash buying shares. The next day, the share price of that stock falls significantly for whatever reason. The business is still the same, but the market has decided to price it significantly lower. Now, this is something that happens all the time in the stock market. Assuming the business fundamentals are still truly sound, you'd want to buy more shares, right? Yeah, but here's the thing, you can't. You just spent all of your money. Now, I've admitted here on the podcast that this was one of my mistakes during the market crash back in March. In prior months, I had already spent a good amount of my free investing cash flow buying up shares. So when the real opportunities emerged, I mean, Disney at $80 a share, anybody? Hello? I was helpless. I only had a little bit of money to buy the stocks that I wanted. And I was really disappointed because there were some very clear values in the market that I just couldn't take action on because I already spent all my cash. So I couldn't take action. Another risk here is the opposite, a lack of patience on the selling side. So let's say that you buy a stock, it's grown over time and made you a decent amount of money. Although it's been said before that you can never lose money by taking a profit, that's another piece of conventional wisdom, I think it's misguided advice because the stock you have purchased may or may not have reached its intrinsic value. And even if it has, maybe you want to hold on to it because you believe that the company's long-term prospects are still great and that the stock price will continue to mirror that long-term growth. So this is related to the mental model of action bias. Sometimes when we have the ability to act, even though we should be patient, we just want to do something. And maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't, but we should never allocate capital just because we have the urge to. This is what famous investor Charlie Munger calls sitting on your hands. I always laugh when I read that. Now, he's talked in the past about buying an excellent company and just sitting on his hands and letting it compound. I like that. I think there's wisdom in that. Number 7, overestimating or underestimating a business's competitive advantages. Now, it's easy to assume that a company you like is amazing and has powerful competitive advantages. Now, this might be evidenced by certain metrics that you come across, like strong sales growth, really strong earnings growth, or other things. It may be evidenced by a famous investor disclosing that they have a position in that stock. It might be evidenced by the fact that you see a successful business like it in the past and are able to kind of form an analogy between that business and this business. Now, I'll admit that I struggle with this sometimes. Sometimes I see what looks like a great business and I just get excited. I just want to buy shares without doing any real research or thinking. Buying stocks is exciting for me. I love that. And I think that many investors, especially beginners, can have that shiny object syndrome where we see something that looks good on the surface and based purely on that initial impression, want to believe that it really is amazing. This may or may not be true, but it's just confirmation bias. We'll do a mental model episode on that concept in the future. But basically, it's when you want to believe something is true, so you're just going to confirm whatever you have already decided in your mind is true. Now, let's think about competitive advantages for a moment. So competitive advantages, that's a concept basically saying that a business has some type of advantage or some type of characteristic that makes it more able to compete than other companies in the space. So think of a company like Amazon. Very few companies can actually compete with Amazon. They have such great power and scale and distribution that it just would be really hard to compete with them. And some companies do compete with them in different areas like cloud computing or even certain niches within retail. But by and large, like they're the top dog. They're the dominant player in a lot of the markets that they've entered. So their competitive advantage in one way is just their massive scale and distribution systems. But in a way, the only true test of a business's competitive advantage is if the supposed advantage is attacked by a competitor and it survives. Now, this is the principle of inversion at work. Go ahead and see episode 10 of this podcast to check out that mental model. But you really only know if a competitive advantage is good if it survives being attacked, right? Because that's the whole point of an advantage. You're supposed to win the battle. So do you remember when Google tried to compete with Facebook and other social media companies several years ago when they created Google Plus? Do you remember that? The platform, it just didn't catch on. I remember it. With all of Google's money, expertise, and brand recognition, they failed. And they proved that at least at some level, Facebook has some kind of real competitive advantage over Google when it comes to creating a social network. So that is an example of showing that Facebook really did have a competitive advantage. And they proved it. They beat Google at social media. And now Google has gone off and done other things since then. But they haven't started creating another social media site. That's one thing that they did not do well. Now, there are many high growth businesses that end up fizzling out because of a lack of a true competitive advantage, or they have a crucial weakness that gets exposed. Maybe a business has a big competitive advantage, but they also have a huge glaring weakness too that another competitor takes advantage of, and it just brings the company to its knees. Even though certain aspects of a business may be great, there's always risk. And if there's a major risk or flaw, that can be taken advantage of. So remember that it's not enough for a business to be great at many things. It must also be able to survive things like technological disruption, changing monetary policy, political environments, global pandemics, etc. If a business cannot survive a bad case scenario that actually happens, it does not matter how well it compounded previously. You cannot multiply by zero. Yet another mental model. But the primary mental model that I want to talk about with this part of the episode is Mr. Market. So whether you're overly optimistic or pessimistic about a stock or company's prospects, it leads to unclear thinking. So Mr. Market is this mental model where imagine a man comes to your house every day and says, I'll buy your business from you for $500. And they're really excited about it. And then they come to you the next day and they say, oh, I'll sell you my shares of that same business for $50. I'm so tired of it. I want to get rid of it. So Mr. Market is this personification of the actual stock market, kind of this really moody, manic, depressive character that at sometimes is super optimistic and happy and greedy even, and at other times is in the depths of despair and just afraid and despondent. And that's really how the stock market works. So sometimes the market is pricing things really optimistically, and sometimes is pricing them really pessimistically. And this applies to this because the market is always under or overestimating a business's competitive advantage. And if you are aligning your consensus and your mindset with the market all the time, then you're probably not going to make great decisions all the time because the market is wrong in the short term, certainly. So be very careful of this. Be as rational and objective as possible. There's also the mental model of inversion here at play. Think about what it would take to dismantle a business's competitive advantages and try to understand the likelihood of that happening. Like, what competitors for real, if any, would have a real shot at taking down that company? So, example, Coca-Cola. Who's going to take down Coca-Cola? It could be done, but you would have to have this massive distribution system. You'd have to be able to source water, sugar cane, and all these other ingredients and flavors together in such a low-cost way that you could actually compete in some way with the big guys. Now, maybe you're competing not on price, but on flavor or some other variable. But nonetheless, Coca-Cola has like dozens and dozens of brands across the entire spectrum of human like taste buds. So it would be really hard to unseat a company like that. Is it possible? Yeah, but the fact that it would be hard to unseat that competitive advantage lets you know that it's really an advantage. So don't look at your investments with rose-colored glasses. Have a good understanding of the nature of the competitive advantages of the businesses that you're thinking about investing in. All right, number 8, outsourcing your thinking to others. This is a big one. And I had to put this one in here because I just think it's so important. I often see people, even people who seem to be relatively knowledgeable about the market, rely heavily on analyst estimates when performing their own research. New investors will also often look to news outlets like CNBC or Bloomberg, etc., and they place a high amount of analytical value on what they hear and see on those networks. Now, don't get me wrong, mainstream financial media, it has its place. But remember that the business model of these networks is primarily to grab and keep your attention with whatever is the latest thing. So be careful what information you place weight on and take everything with a grain of salt. If you're a veteran listener of the show, you've noticed by now, I never outright recommend that you buy or sell any stock. Now, there's a legal reason for that, but even beyond that, I don't do this for two reasons. Number one, I might be wrong. You don't deserve to lose money because I missed something in my own analysis. And then number two, my goal is to help teach you principles, not give you a quick fix. There are plenty of people in the world who give direct stock advice. I am not one of them. My vision is to teach you timeless investing principles as I learn them so that we can gain the skills of an investor. If we have the skills of an investor, we can move from the beginner phase to the intermediate phase to the advanced phase, and we can master investing together. That's my mission and my vision. If you focus on the outcome only, over the process, eventually the world will change and you'll be forced to change what you're doing anyway. If you focus on process and principles, any number of things can happen and you'll be able to pivot. There will be bond bubbles, there'll be cryptocurrency hype, there will be speculative IPOs, flashing headlines. You will be more immune to them and able to think clearly the more you're able to focus on sound principles and a sound process. So learn from as many people as you possibly can, but letting others think for you is a dangerous road that's rooted in intellectual laziness. Please do not go down this road. That includes me and everything you hear on this show. Take everything I say with a grain of salt and analyze it for yourself. If you don't think for yourself, you will fail at investing and ultimately you will fail at life. I'm just gonna say it. Straight up. If you don't think for yourself, you're going down a dangerous path because you let someone else control the agenda for your life or your investing plan, and that's just gonna lead you somewhere that you had no intention of going. So be very careful. Now, the mental model here is what I call, or what is called rather, the availability heuristic. Our brains tend to gravitate toward what is most frequent, what is most available, and what is most recent, and not necessarily on what is most important or true. If you constantly read stock newsletters, watch financial news, or read from certain authors, you're subconsciously adopting their ways of thinking. Now, that may or may not be a good thing, so be careful who your teachers are. Another mental model at work is thinking from first principles. We covered this mental model back in episode 26. You can check that one out. I'll link that in the show notes as well. When you're focused on first principles, you can compare and contrast the investment thesis of another person and walk through their logic step by step to see if it's valid or not. If you're reasoning from first principles, you're not just coming up with some sort of surface level argument. You're getting to the root of the reasons of why you believe certain things. And if you have a very strong understanding of why you believe those things, then your investment thesis has legs to stand on. You can actually give a reasonable argument and have greater confidence knowing that you approached your purchasing decision or your selling decision or your holding decision with rationality because you're rooted in first principles. All right, so those were the 8 mistakes of beginner investors. Man, that was fun. I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. Now, before we go, I want to kind of wrap this up and talk about the general themes. What are some of the things that we learned here? What are the biggest pitfalls of new investors? Now, after some reflection, I think we can really boil these things down to 3 specific themes. The first one is a lack of control over emotions. Emotions over clear thought are a quick way to sabotage your investment's potential. So think as clearly and rationally as you can. Understand and avoid unnecessary risks. Life is too short to just take unnecessary risks. Now take risks by all means, risks that you need to take and risks that are well calculated and measured and thought about, premeditated on. But don't take unnecessary risks. It's just not necessary to building wealth. The other thing is a lack of knowledge. Make sure you learn. Learn. Read the books. Listen to the podcast. Ask the questions. Review the numbers. Open up the brokerage account and get started. Get your feet wet. There are so many ways to learn in today's world, and some methods are more effective for some than others, but just find out what works for you and just do it. Please do not listen to this episode and just say, okay, well, I haven't started investing and all of this sounds great, but I'm just going to go back to not investing. Like, no, go online, go download an app, go open your brokerage account, put some money in it, start learning some things, start doing. Lack of knowledge will keep you from that. But if you get knowledge, it empowers you to take action. So get knowledge and take action. The last thing is a lack of wisdom. This is where I don't see a lot of people talking about this in the financial space and in the investing space. People talk about emotions a lot. People talk about knowledge a lot. But what about wisdom? This is distinctly different from knowledge. I don't think it's enough to understand the markets and even enough to have great control over your emotions. What I have observed is that the best investors also have wisdom, a good temperament, and a keen understanding of their own strengths and weaknesses. Warren Buffett is practical and down to earth. Peter Lynch knew he needed to work hard and look at a lot of different investments in order to find good ones. In the words of the Oracle at Delphi, know thyself. Know yourself. If you know that you just would not be a successful investor if you invested in cyclical companies and watched your paper net worth fall by 50% from time to time, then don't invest in cyclical companies. No one's saying that you have to. Maybe you stick to another area of the market. Know yourself, know what kind of volatility that you're willing to accept, understand the asset classes you're investing in, and seek wisdom. Don't just seek knowledge, but seek wisdom and seek control over your emotions. So in a nutshell, those are the general themes here. And I really hope that you got one or two things out of this podcast. And I'm just so thankful for you. Thank you for listening, making it to the end of this episode. I know I shared a lot. It's more than I share in a typical episode when I'm talking about a specific company or mental model, but these are just things that I've seen over and over and things that my investor friends have seen over and over as well, that we just want to help you not make the same mistakes that we did. And it's always better to learn from someone else's experience before having the pain of going through an experience yourself and just losing a lot of money. So please heed this advice. If you have any suggestions or ways to tweak what I'm saying, or you disagree with something, I want to know about it. Let me know. Send me a direct message at Stock Storyteller on Instagram. That's at Stock Storyteller. Or you can send me an email. My email is at alex@stockstoriespodcast.com. That's alex@stockstoriespodcast.com. So thank you so much for listening. Again, I'd love to hear from you. If you're a fan of the show and you want to help out in some way, the biggest way that you can help this show out is by sharing it with a friend. Share this podcast with someone who you think would benefit from it, particularly this episode. I think this episode is just a great primer for people who want to get started in investing. So if you think this episode would be really helpful, go ahead and share it with a friend. I would be very grateful. And of course, rating and reviewing this show on Apple Podcasts is also very helpful as well. So I appreciate you. Thank you in advance, and I'll see you next week. The information presented here on Stock Stories is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. You and you alone are responsible for your investment and financial decisions. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, or financial advisor that can analyze your specific situation in the context of your goals and circumstances.